And now it's time for our drama series this week, A Little Twist of Dahl, a selection of classic tales by Master of the Bizarre, Roald Dahl, narrated by Charles Dance. And today's story is Taste, starring Jonathan Hyde.
Whenever Richard Pratt dined with Mike Schofield, they had a little bet. Richard was a well-known gourmet and an expert on wine, so Mike would challenge him to identify the claret he served with the main course.
Unmistakable. Quite unmistakable.
You're bluffing, Richard. You must be. You can't have got it already.
The steak, which never varied, was an entire case of the wine itself.
Warm and well-mannered, with a surprisingly impish sense of humour. It's an Aubryon, isn't it? An Aubryon 45.
Although Richard always guessed correctly, Mike never seemed to mind. After all, as he liked to point out to his wife later on...
At least it proves the wine I serve's good enough to recognise. And anyway, there's always next time.
More than 3 months passed before Richard Pratt came to dinner again. At 7 o'clock precisely, Mike checked that his housekeeper had set the table to his satisfaction, then joined his wife and daughter in the drawing room.
You look lovely, Margaret. Absolutely lovely.
Thank you, dear.
You could do with making a start on getting changed, though, Louise. Richard will be here soon.
Honestly, Daddy, you're so old-fashioned. No one dresses for dinner anymore.
It doesn't do any harm to make a little effort once in a while. After all, it isn't every night we dine with Richard Pratt.
No, thank God.
Louise.
I'm sorry, Daddy, but I don't like him. He gives me the creeps.
That's enough, Louise. Please just do as your father says.
Oh, very well. I don't know why you take your dinner party so seriously, though, Daddy. I really don't.
As a matter of fact, it was simple. Although Mike was surrounded by the trappings of success, he felt somehow inadequate.
Well, I hope everyone's enjoying the Moselle. It's the perfect wine to have before claret.
He earned his living as a stockbroker, and like everyone who works in the city, he knew that, fundamentally, he was little more than a jumped-up bookmaker.
Of course, a lot of people serve Rhenish, but that's barbaric. A glass of Rhenish can ruin the taste of a delicate claret.
His dinner parties, however, enabled him to project an air of worldly sophistication. They enabled him to mix with men like Richard Pratt. And they enabled him, at the start of each one, to show off his knowledge of wine.
If you're going to serve claret, then you've only one choice. You've got to start with a Moselle. Isn't that right, Richard?
I'm sorry?
Mike was just talking about the wine.
Oh, was he really? I didn't hear a word.
Oh.
That's what comes of sitting me opposite your daughter. She's so enchanting, I forget where I am.
Despite himself, Mike felt a little disappointed, and his spirits weren't fully restored until his housekeeper came in with the main course, an enormous roast of beef.
Put it here at the head of the table, will you please?
Certainly, Mr. Schofield.
I'll carve, and then I think...
And he rubbed his hands together in anticipation.
And then I think I'll fetch the claret.
Reinvigorated by the prospect of a new wine to gamble with, Mike practically bounced into the room where it had been standing for the last 24 hours with its cork out.
Excellent. Chambrayed to perfection.
When Richard Pratt had first started coming to dinner, he and Mike had gone all over the house trying to find the best place for a wine to acquire room temperature. In the end, they had discovered the perfect spot. The top of one of the filing cabinets in Mike's study.
The big polished oak one, next to the door.
Holding the bottle of claret as delicately as he would a newborn baby, Mike gently eased it into a little wicker wine basket. As he turned it to hide its label, he smiled to himself in satisfaction.
You won't guess this one. Not in a million years.
Tell me, Louise, have you had a chance to read my new book on the great pre-war vintages?
Not yet, I'm afraid.
Pity. The critics say it's a masterpiece, but they're a jaded lot. I'd welcome the views of someone younger and more fresh.
Richard looked up as Mike walked softly back into the room. He glanced at the bottle of claret Mike was cradling in both hands, and his eyebrows rose in a slight supercilious arch.
I warn you, Richard, this one is rather tricky. I won't force you to bet on it if you don't want.
I take it that means it's from one of the smaller vineyards?
Maybe it is, and maybe it isn't.
But it's a good year, one of the grapes?
Yes, that I can guarantee.
Then it shouldn't be too hard to identify.
You mean you want to bet?
Certainly.
Good, excellent. Shall we say the usual, a case of the wine itself?
If you're so confident, perhaps you'd care to increase the stake? How about, oh, I don't know, 50 cases?
50? Don't be absurd.
You're the one who thinks I won't guess it.
Listen, old man, I'll quite happily bet you whatever you like. I just don't want to take advantage, that's all.
But you are willing to increase the stake?
That's what I said. I'll take any bet you care to mention.
I see. In that case, I'll tell you what I want you to bet me.
Slowly he looked at everyone else in the room. At Margaret, at Louise, even at the housekeeper who was hovering uncertainly by the door. He seemed to be reminding them that they were witness to the offer.
I want you to bet me the hand of your daughter in marriage.
Oh. Hey, stop it! That isn't funny.
Oh, don't worry, dear. They're only joking.
I'm not joking.
For heaven's sake, Richard. You're being ridiculous.
You said you'd bet me whatever I wanted.
Well, I meant money.
Well, then it's a pity you didn't say money. Still, if you want to go back on your word...
No, it isn't a question of going back on my word. It's a no bet anyway. You don't have a daughter to put up, so you can't match the stake.
Mike!
I'll put up anything you like. My house, for example. How about my house?
The townhouse or the country house?
Both, if you wish. You can keep them for yourself or sign them over to Louise.
At this point, Mike suddenly hesitated. Louise noticed and looked at him with alarm.
Sure you're not suggesting we should take this silly bet?
No, of course not. But perhaps we should at least consider it.
Stop it, Daddy! I refuse to be gambled on.
Quite right, dear.
Think about it, though. If Richard loses, I'll be able to give you two lovely houses.
But what if he wins?
He won't. Not this time. I guarantee it.
He's won before.
That's because I made it too easy for him. But this time, I've chosen a claret from a tiny vineyard surrounded by a dozen others of the same size. Even the world's greatest connoisseurs can't tell one from the other. It's impossible.
No, Daddy. I don't like it.
Neither do I.
Imagine it, Louise. In less than 10 minutes, you could be a woman of property. Set up for life.
He was pushing her hard, standing right over her as she sat in her chair.
Take the bet, Louise. Go on. Take it now before Richard changes his mind.
Oh, Daddy, I don't know. Are you sure I can't lose?
Great heavens, girl, I've said so, haven't I?
All right, Daddy. As long as you're sure.
Good. Then it's a bet.
Yes, it's a bet.
Mike quickly filled everyone's glass with claret and sat himself down. Richard, aware that he had an unusually attentive audience, made a great show of analysing the wine's colour before raising it to his nose.
An interesting bouquet. Flowery, but not at all familiar. You've set me quite a task.
Richard Pratt was about 50 and did not possess a pleasant face. It was dominated by his mouth, which, with its pendulous lower lip, resembled nothing so much as a massive, wet-rimmed keyhole.
And now for the all-important first taste.
He drained his glass of half its wine and began noisily swilling it from cheek to cheek, passing it over his tongue and even on occasion chewing at it like bread. Then, after more than a minute, he swallowed it down.
Quite delightful. Gentle and gracious with an almost feminine finish. But what can it be? Normally I'd jump right in and guess the vineyard, but I must be careful now that the stakes are so high.
And looking across the table, he treated Louise to a knowing little smile that made her skin crawl.
Now let us begin with the region. It's too light and frothy to be from Saint-Emilion or Grave. Therefore it must be a Médoc. But from which commune in the Médoc does it come?
He sat back in his chair and steepled his fingers together.
The bouquet is insufficiently violent for it to be a Margaux. Could it then be a Pauillac? No, I don't think so. It lacks the dusty, pithy flavour of a Pauillac. Its taste is demure and bashful, with a consoling quality one associates with a Saint-Julien. Of course. course, that's it. This wine is a Saint-Julien.
Goodness, I need a cigarette.
Put that away at once. Smoking at table is a disgusting habit.
Louise looked at him briefly and blew out the match, but she left the unlit cigarette dangling defiantly between her fingers.
Now then, where were we? Ah, yes. We know it's a Saint-Julien from the Médoc region. It would help if we could establish the growth. It's clearly not from a first-growth vineyard, or even a second. It lacks the requisite power. But could it be a third?
With ostentatious slowness, he took another sip.
No, it's a fourth growth from a good year. Perhaps even a great one, such as 1934.
He returned the glass to his sagging lower lip, and this time, repulsively, licked at the wine with his tongue.
There's something very idiosyncratic about that finish. A teasing, astringent quality that's only found in one place. The fourth growth vineyards around Bechevel.
He glanced over at Mike, who was leaning further and further across the table with his mouth slightly open.
I don't think it's an actual Bechevel, mind you, but it must be from close by. Chateau Talbot would be an obvious choice, and it certainly fits the bill. Could it be a Talbot? Yes, I believe it could.
Everyone, even the housekeeper, was finding it hard to breathe as Richard took one final lingering sip.
No, I'm mistaken. The fruit of a Talbot is closer to the surface, and if that's the case, there's only one other choice. This wine, my friends, is a Chateau Brunner du Cru. A Chateau Brunner du Cru, 1934.
He looked expectantly at Mike, waiting for him to turn the bottle in its little wicker basket and expose the label.
Is that your final answer?
Yes, it is.
Come on, Daddy. Turn round the bottle and let's have a peek. I want my two houses.
Just a minute, Louise. Wait. Just a minute.
Mike, whatever's the matter?
No, keep out of this, Margaret. Will you please?
Daddy, you don't mean... He hasn't guessed it right.
I'll tell you what. Richard, why don't you and I slip off to the room next door and have a little chat?
I don't want a little chat. I want to see the label on that bottle. What are you waiting for? Go on and turn it round.
He had the self-assured arrogance of a man who knows he's a winner, and he seemed about to turn thoroughly nasty when suddenly the housekeeper, the quiet, ever-watchful housekeeper, stepped forward.
Excuse me, Mr. Pratt. I believe these are yours.
And she handed him a pair of large, horn-rimmed reading glasses.
Are they? Perhaps they are.
Oh, yes, sir. There's no question about it. I found them in Mr. Schofield's study earlier. You must have left them behind when you popped in there, on your own, before dinner.
As the implication of the housekeeper's words sank in, Mike felt a sudden rush of blood to his face, and he slowly stood up.
You found them in my study. Whereabouts in my study?
The housekeeper, a tiny little woman of about 70, drew herself up to her full height and tightened her lips together in grim satisfaction.
They were on top of the filing cabinet, sir. The big, polished oak one next to the door.
And another one of those on Christmas morning, which is tomorrow, in case you didn't know.